one thing. Let me start this. Okay, we are starting the second hour for Friday, and I was going to make an announcement. Wow, what was I going to say? It was a good one. There's some issues that are going on with the live streaming through Ustream, and so the audio is going out, but the video is not. But we will have the material that we are recording directly through my laptop up. It's not streaming live, so I don't have any interference going on with that, but we will have the material up later. The audio file for the first hour class is already up. And again, if you didn't get the email, if you didn't or you did, all the audio files start with a letter A for audio, V for video, the three for yesterday are up, and then they're numbered sequentially. So we're going to have 12 separate sections. The last audio file that's already up is A-04 with an MP3, and the videos are 1, 2, and 3 starting with a V, and the handouts all start with HO. All right, well, let's get back into where we were. All right, so we're talking about what's going on in the land of Palestine, where the Jews are, subsequent to the death of Alexander the Great. So we talked about that before. Alexander died. His generals are going to take control of the territories, different territories. Two of them that are the most significant are the Ptolemies and the Seleucids. And they're going to vie back and forth for what's going on in the land of Palestine. So we mentioned before that Ptolemy had control of Palestine at one point, Antiochus, and I mentioned that we're going to have multiple guys named Antiochus. Some people call him Antiochus, some people say Antiochus, so I may switch back and forth on my pronunciation. But anyway, when he took control, he allowed the Jews to continue to worship in the temple as they had done in the past, pledged to keep unlawful dead animals outside of the city. This was an issue of ceremonial purity and holiness according to the dictates of the law and so forth, and he allowed them to do that. So we've got some things that are going to develop here. Now, one of the things, and I don't mean to say this is going to be anything really difficult, but it's going to be confusing. Just imagine. We are kind of isolated. How many countries touch the United States? Well, technically speaking, there's one country to the north of us, that's Canada, and there's one below us, that's Mexico. But that's about it. I think
probably under the sea, Russia touches.
The Bering Strait, that's not that far over there from Alaska. All right. But my point is, where we are is isolated. All right? If you are living in Europe, you can be surrounded by all kinds of different countries, all kinds of different languages, all kinds of different cultures, because the countries are packed in and they're smaller and whatever. You've got lots of different countries around you. Well, that's the dynamic that's going on in the land of Palestine during this period of time. They've got on the western shore, on the western side, they've got the Mediterranean, but right between them and the Mediterranean, a large part of the time, Tyre and Sidon, and the Philistines are on this side, and then they're over in the middle. Then on the other side of the river, you've got Moab and Ammon and all the other countries and so forth. But they are surrounded by lots of countries that are close enough that they can have inroads, not just travel inroads, but military, political domination inroads on them. And so one of the things that's in play here is all these nations are more like Europe than they are the United States from the standpoint of being surrounded by lots of people who could cause, you know, potential difficulties. So the reason why we mention that is we're going to see lots of different names of lots of different leaders who are going to form alliances with or against people who are going to impact the land of Palestine, specifically the Jews. So, Hannibal, we've heard of Hannibal, who's marching elephants all over the place. A general from Carthage, he'd previously been defeated by Rome. So, because of his encouragement, Antiochus invades Greece. All right. Now, Greece happened to be an area that had already been dominated by Alexander the Great, but this particular general wasn't in control of that. So just because these generals inherited different parts of Alexander's empire didn't mean they were satisfied, because some of them vied for each other. Antiochus, who's the Seleucid that's involved in what's going on in Syria, would make multiple attempts to go against Egypt. In order to do that, they're going to have to go through the land of Palestine. So Antiochus invades Greece, didn't work out very well. He's defeated by Rome and forced to surrender. Now that's an interesting thing. defeated by Roman forced to surrender. So notice the date on this. This is 192 BC. What's the significance of that? It's going to be 130 years from now that Pompey, the Roman general, sends an emissary from Rome to quell the disturbances that are going on among, watch this, rival priests in Jerusalem. Two brothers, each of whom were claiming to be the high priest, are fighting against each other, not just from the standpoint of who's going to be priest, but who's going to be the king in the land of Palestine. You might think, what's that about? More coming. So the significance of this is Rome, who doesn't dominate the land of Palestine until 63, about 130 years later, is already making its presence felt in the eastern Mediterranean, which is this area. So that doesn't work out. So Antiochus is defeated by Rome. He's forced to surrender. Notice the line. This is the beginning of Rome's influence in this part of the eastern Mediterranean. What's the significance of that? From 63 BC until the time of Jesus' life and death, roughly 100 centuries, Rome, 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 everything was Rome. And so when everybody's talking about what's going on politically in the land of Palestine during the ministry of John the Baptist, who are the Roman emperors? Well, they're mentioned. Augustus, Tiberius, and then later Claudius is going to kick the Jews out of Rome that we see in the book of Acts. Those are all Roman emperors. All the guys who are procurators or governors or kings reigning in Palestine, they're all kings who are allowed to have authority and reign, delegated authority, by Rome. And so Rome runs everything. And so when it says, is it lawful to give pay taxes to Caesar? Who's Caesar? Caesar, whose name is translated into German Kaiser, all right, means he's the emperor, he's the ruler of everything. That's the Roman emperor. That's the Roman Caesar. So everything's about Rome. So 200 years before the time of Christ, Rome's influence is spreading through the world. Remember, let's flash back to Daniel chapter 2. Daniel 2 talked about the image with four kingdoms. Babylon's gone. That's the one who put the Jews into captivity in 606 BC. They were there for 70 years. The Medes and the Persians next. It was the Cyrus, the king of the Persians, that allowed them to leave. It was Greece, Empire of Alexander the Great, who died in the 320s BC. He's gone. And now Rome's going to be the next dominant empire. Their influence is still growing. It hasn't reached the extent that it's going to in the land of Palestine, but it's growing. So Antiochus over here in Syria is going to go to Greece and try to conquer them, and Rome stops him from doing that. What's Rome doing in Greece? That's my point. Rome is already Rome's already spreading its impact. So, Antiochus, now here's a critical thing here. Watch this language. Antiochus lost to Rome, and he had to pay the price. He lost. That's going to cost him something. I'm guessing some people lost some lives. But Antiochus' defeat was not just a military one. He lost lands and territories. So if you lose a battle, sometimes you lose land. All right. When we lived in France in the early 60s, when my dad was stationed in the Air Force there, we lived in the Alsace-Lorraine area, part of France that used to be part of Germany. Why was it used to be part of Germany? Because after the war, Germany lost some of its possessions. And so everybody there spoke German who was old enough to remember what the war was like. The kids learned French at school, but all the older adults, they all spoke German. So when my mom would send us to the local bakery, she'd tell us how to say everything in German. Why? Because the people who ran the bakery weren't little kids. They were there who were part of Germany when that piece of land was part of Germany. My point is, lands change hands. And so Antiochus loses a battle. But he not only loses a battle, he loses lands and territories. And he lost lands and territories that he collected taxes and tribute from. So he loses income. I'm going to take this from you. Hey, I make money off of that land. Tough. By the way, you're not only not going to make money off that land, you need to pay us because we defeated you. Watch this. That's going to cause Mr. Antiochus to do lots of crazy things in order to generate revenue. What's he going to do to generate revenue? That's going to come. So from this point forward, because of his loss to Rome, Antiochus has to pay taxes. He loses a source of his own taxes, and now he has to pay taxes. So there's a double whammy there. You don't have the land that you used to collect tribute on. And by the way, because we defeated you, you pay us. So this is not meant to make everything, you know, overly simplified, but it's like we're the mafia and we want our protection money. All right? Only this is a dominant empire. This is on a larger scale. All right? So Antiochus later died while attempting, notice, to rob a Mesopotamian temple. Why was he robbing a Mesopotamian temple? Because religious temples of all kinds of persuasion in those days was where people stored wealth. Gold and silver. And if you go back and you look at Solomon's temple and all the things that David laid up, they would make shields out of gold. They would make shields out of bronze. They would make shields out of silver. Why? What's the shield? So it's rather than ingots that we're used to in gold bullion and whatever, they would fashion them in things that were easily stored in banks. Only they didn't have banks like vaults. They were often stored in treasury houses associated with a temple. So, you know, people made the joke before, and I forget which criminal it was. So why do you rob banks? And the criminal, whoever it was, I think it was Dillinger or whatever, said, that's where the money is. Why do you rob temples? That's where the money was. All right? You don't have to be so smart.
Was
so
Hezekiah that showed all the wealth?
Hezekiah, correct. And that was part of the, and then when Isaiah found out, this is after his life is extended.
Yeah.
After he is going to do much better. This is about Isaiah chapter 37. He's going to do much better. And emissaries, watch this, from Babylon, who later defeat them, come and wish him well. And he gave them a grand tour of everything. What did you show him? There's nothing I didn't show him. You mean they saw all of our wealth? Yeah. Well, Babylon now knows the wealth that's there.
And
Babylon takes it. Now later, some of that's going to be released during the time of Cyrus. More about that when we get to the Roman Empire. Here's my point. Antiochus is going to die trying to rob a temple. All right. Now, let me just say, this is the first of a series of Antiochus. All right. First of rulers who bear the same name. This guy's going to rob a temple and he's going to die in the process. But guess where a temple is in the city of Jerusalem that might have some bugs? All right. Yeah, that's the Jewish temple. And so the Jewish temple is going to come into play from the standpoint of that's where most religious people store their wealth. And that's going to become an issue. So let's jump down. Before that, however, another Seleucid, known as Antiochus, the fourth, this guy had a major impact on Palestine. This guy takes control of the land. He acts like he's a god. He wants everybody. And now remember, the Seleucids are one of four generals. The Ptolemies are the other two, those are the critical ones, who were generals under Alexander. And so they not only helped Alexander in his spread as he's conquering the world, they are also helping Alexander in the context of conquering the world to spread what was important to Alexander: Greek culture, Greek ideas, Greek philosophy, Greek religion. And so this guy was enamored of Greek religion, and he didn't want anybody to worship anything but Greek gods. And he's a powerful guy. So remember, who's in control of the land where you live often dictates what you can and can't not do religiously. I'm the king. I don't like that. You can't do that religiously here. All right? So that's going to come into play. So he acts like he's a god. He's insisting that everybody around him, watch, he's insisting that they worship gods and they submit to Greek culture. Now, how's that going to go with Jews who are dedicated to worship a singular god? Not going to go over too well. All right, and so this is the beginning of a problem that doesn't go away until you get to the New Testament. In fact, it doesn't go away in the New Testament. All right, if you open your Bibles, and you don't have to do it now, and you turn to Acts chapter 6, and the Lord's church is starting, all right, and you see that there are widows in the early church, and there's a dissension about who's caring for them. And one of the groups of widows are referred to as the Hellenists, the Greeks, the Grecians, and the Hebrews. What's that about? Well, here are Jews who had adopted in large measure Grecian culture, who were afraid. Some of them are coming from far-flung places for the great feast. They become members, and they're thinking, hey, you're not taking care of this. So there's a little bias. There's a little prejudice there. Where does this come from? This comes in part from the influence of Alexander the Great that didn't go away when Alexander died. So we are almost 200 years, 160 years on the other side of Alexander's death. And you've got generals who continue what he started, and their successors continue what those generals started, and Greek culture is still going to have a tremendous impact and influence in that part of the world, even in the land of Palestine. So here's this guy who is now not the Ptolemy who was in control, who allowed things to go on. He's now one of the Seleucids that's in control. Remember, everybody's jockeying back and forth for control of this part of the world because of how pivotal it was geographically. And he says, this is what I want you to do. That's not going to go well. So watch what he does. He suspends temple sacrifices. Remember the huge do-over that we talked about? He says, you can't do that anymore. You got to be kidding. we were in captivity for 70 years. We didn't have access to Jerusalem, and even if we did, the temple's destroyed, you know, 20 years later. And now God wants us to do this. Zerubbabel, Ezra, Nehemiah, the whole priesthood system is back in gear. This is what God wants us to do, and you're telling us we can't do it. That's right. He not only tells them they can't do it, he says you need to start offering animal sacrifices other than what you were offering, unclean animal, swine, in part of your service. So we're going to see more of this develop later. He turns the temple of God into a pagan place of worship. You think that's going to cause some problems? Just a reminder, no kings, the prophets aren't running around anymore, and the priests are in control, all right? To some extent, some of the priests are going to capitulate and give in to Greek practices. All right, some of them are going to do that. That's going to become a big issue. Notice, the temple became a place to worship Zeus. Zeus is not another name for God. It's another name for a Greek god, but it's not another name for God. It's a place of worship to Zeus, a Greek god, and swine were sacrificed on the altar. So that system is now polluted, and it's going to stay that way for 3 years. All right, and what's going to happen next? You see the headline, the Maccabean War breaks out. This is going to determine where Israel is during the time of Jesus. You've got these guys come in vying for contention against each other, and we're in the middle, and they're telling us what we can do because they're in control, and we can't control our own destiny because we have no kings, we have no military like we used to have. This is horrible for us, all right? So Antiochus' zeal for Greek culture was the final straw. So we're going to learn in the next section, there are five brothers, the son of a man by the name of Mattathias, and they're going to rebel against this kind of stuff. We are not going to do what you want us to do. Some of the Jews were threatened under penalty of death not to worship the way they used to and worship pagan gods. Under penalty of death. Is that going to cause some problems? Big deal. All right. So you can see, now watch this. This is roughly 300 years after the period of the intertestamental period starts. That's going to start about 536. All right, so we're way into the period here. We've gone through the Babylonians, we've gone through the Grecians, we've gone through and the Medo-Persians and the Grecians, and the Romans are about to come in control. And before the Romans come into control, you got the Syrians, the Seleucids, and the Ptolemies, the Egyptians, fighting over this particular area and fighting against each other. And we're in the middle, and we can't do what we want to do. All right. Remember when Jesus said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free"? What did the religious leader say? "We've never been in bondage to any man." What in the world were they thinking? They've been in bondage for hundreds of years, but they were indignant and they were arrogant and they were a little bit too self-righteous. They refused to admit that they didn't have control of their own destiny. Here's part of the problem. This is why the zealots were so had so much influence. We need to have an uprising, and we need to kill all these people who are making us do stuff we don't want to do, are not allowing us to do stuff that we do need to do, and we need to drive them out of here. That was a huge political contention. Huge political contention. And the tension was there all the time. That's why when Jesus came preaching things and attracting a lot of attention, the religious leaders want to say, "Who is this guy? You know, what's he doing? What's he saying?" And we're afraid he's going to rock the boat so much that we're going to have problems dealing with the Romans. And the last thing they wanted was to have more oppression like this. The Romans at least let them do a lot of stuff. They couldn't put anybody to death. They had to have Roman permission for that. That's why, you know, when Jesus died, they couldn't put him to death. They could do only so much, but they couldn't pass the capital punishment thing. They had the Romans to depend on for that. And so everybody was complicit in the death of Jesus. But that's one element, right? So this is not the first time this happened. If you go back into the Old Testament time of the book of Judges, watch this. You're going to see a passage in which it says there were no blacksmiths in Israel during that day. Why were there no blacksmiths? Because blacksmiths could fashion weapons of war. So if you had farm implements that needed sharpening, you had to go to the Philistines, who are your arch enemies, to get your tools sharpened. What's my point? Another country determined how they were going on in their livelihood. Incidentally, Gideon was threshing wheat in a wine press. Why was Gideon threshing wheat in a wine press? Because he didn't want the Philistines to know what he had and where it was. Because if they knew where it was, they'd come and take it. What's the point? Another nation was telling the Jewish people what they could and couldn't do. They'd come and steal your food. They wouldn't let you have tools unless you came to them to get them done. That's the kind of oppression that was going on in the past. Not exactly the same, but it's still oppressive. So if you don't control your own destiny, somebody else is going to control it for you. We want you to make bricks. We're making all the bricks we can. Let us go and let us go out into the wilderness and worship your God. You must not be have enough work to do. Now you make your bricks and you get your own straw. Everybody's telling everybody what to do. And so this is on a major scale, all right? So it just so happens I use the word straw here, not related to the issue of the Egyptians, but that's part of the problem. So let's get into the Maccabean War. Who are the Maccabees, all right? So this first paragraph is critical, and I say it's critical. I wrote it. It's totally made up on my own. Everything else that I've written, I condensed and rewrote and adapted from the text that I would encourage you to get if you get a chance to. But I put this together, and I want you to hope it makes sense. Go too far. The names Maccabeans, Maccabees, Hasmonean are all used interchangeably. Watch. The key man that we're about to introduce is Matthias, all right? His grandfather was called Hasmonean, and that H put on the front of it is Hasmonean. So Hasmonean is a reference to a name two generations on the other side of Matthias. Maccabean is what one of his sons was called. The word Maccabeus comes from a Hebrew term that means hammer. And his son, when he came into control, as we're about to see, was called Judas Maccabeus. His name was called Judas the Hammer. And so the family name was known either by the Hasmoneans, after Mattathias' grandfather, or the Maccabeans, or the Maccabees, after Mattathias' son. So they're the same group of people, all right? It's like when you read, who was it that Joseph was sold into slavery? You got two different names. They're talking about the same group of people, all right? So one of them says the Gideonites, and one of them says the Midianites. When you read the context, they're the same group of people, they're just known by two different names. The Babylonians are also known as the Chaldeans. Same thing, all right? So here's the point. Same group of people. The name Hasmonean comes from the ancestor, grandfather Matthias, key individual during this time period, who along with his sons rebelled and revolted. This is about what we're seeing. Remember, Antiochus defamed, desecrated the Jewish temple, turned it into a pagan place of worship, and offered swine on the sacrifice. So that system is polluted now, desecrated. All right. So they're going to revolt against that. So Antiochus the Fourth, the Jewish people are caused to compromise the religion if they're going along with that. So one of his sons, Judas, called Maccabeus, meaning the hammer. So all of his members are known as either one of those. So let's drop down to what's going to happen. So Antiochus the Fourth, he becomes king, and notice the murder of his brother. This is straight out of the text. MTM, it means Matthew to Malachi. After his brother, notice his brother was named Seleucus the Fourth. It's just like, you know, Ptolemy's. It's a name of a ruler that continues. The Caesars, lots of different Caesars, lots of different Seleucus. That's just a title name that they took, all right, as is Antiochus. So he becomes the king. So this guy is challenged physically, militarily by Rome, Parthia, Egypt. And the point is he's got all these people around him that are challenging him. And he's trying to fight battles, trying to win battles, trying to take lands and so forth. And a lot of it is to protect the integrity of his nation, but a lot of it is in order to sustain himself. Where do you get money? You get money by paying, by having, you know, some kind of business enterprise, or by conquering other nations and exacting money from them. So here's the problem, all right? To keep up with the taxes and the tributes that were owned by the Seleucids, remember, Seleucid is a name of the rulers of Syria. Antiochus is a ruler in Syria, but he's in the line of the successors of Seleucus. So Antiochus is part of the Seleucid Empire. All right. So what's he got to do? He's got to rob places. He's got to take money from somebody somewhere. All right. So one of the things he does is he robs temples. One of the other Antiochuses that we saw before got killed trying to rob the temple of Mesopotamia. Why do you go there? That's where the money is. That's where the wealth is. So that's where they stored everything. Additionally, a lot of people would use money from these sanctuary places, take their money, and they would buy freedom or protection from other people. So some people offer it, some people take it. All right? So here's Antiochus. He comes to the city of Jerusalem. All right? It's another temple. These people are not worshiping Greek stuff like we want them to, so he changes the worship system, and he's going to start looking for the wealth. All right? So how are the leaders, the priests, and other people, how are they going to be with this? here's part of the dynamic that's going to be really, really critical in the next 100 years. So let me see the last time this Seleucid, this foreign, notice this is 163 BC, that's perfect. This is 100 years before the Romans come on the scene. Pompey comes in 63 BC. So I want you to see what kind of mess the land of Palestine gets into 100 years before the Romans come on the scene. And it's going to be a huge mess for the next 100 years. And it's not going to get any better until Rome comes. And even then, there's still going to be problems. So let's keep going here. All right, so during his reign, the temple proved to be a perfect target. His new wealth was there, treasures were there. And notice also that some of the priests were there. All right, let me fix that. The priests were, oh, I got it right. The priests were not beyond vying, jockeying for titles and positions. In this period of time, some guys who wanted to be high priest would bribe whoever the controlling country was, and the leader of that country said, I want you to make me the priest. Why? Because the priesthood developed into a position of political and military and governmental authority, and not just the religious authority. We are going to see priests who assume the name king. We're going to see priests who go out and fight battles. You think, wait a minute, I thought priests were supposed to do all the stuff they do in and around the confines of the temple. Yeah, that's the way it used to be. That's the way it was during the time of Moses. That's the way it was during the time of the initial do-over at the beginning of the period of the intertestamental period. But we are way into the midst of the intertestamental period, and you got priests not doing anything like priests are supposed to be doing. They're wanting to be kings. They're wanting to be dictators. They're wanting to control things politically, militarily, and that's not just what the priests were about. So, remember, and I'm going to use a term here, we mentioned it already, Hellenization means the spread of all things Greek. So Hellenists, that's a group of political people during the time of Jesus, Hellenists, and before that, they were involved in the spread of Grecian culture, and a lot of them pushed Greek gods. And that, they're going to back off of that going forward. But this guy Antiochus is all about pushing not only the culture, but the worship. All right? So Mr. Antiochus, look at all he could do by going to the city of Jerusalem. First, he could rob the temple. Second, he could sell offices to people. You want a position of influence? How much money you got? All right? Again, I don't like to bring up contemporary things because I have a huge distaste for politics. All right? And so that's not just a religious thing, but it is a religious thing. I just have a huge distaste for politics. There's a gentleman who was just recalled from being an ambassador to a specific country who donated $1 million to somebody's presidential campaign. What did it land him? He got to be an ambassador to some country. So there was some favor that was changed there. It's a quid pro quo. I'll give you $1 million. By the way, when you become president, just find a plum job for me. All right? This is, I don't mean to say anything demeaning, but generally speaking, ambassadors is a pretty relatively easy task. All right? So this guy had a lot of money. He didn't need the money. And being an ambassador doesn't make you wealthy necessarily, but it's kind of a plum title to get. And so I'm going to give you $1 million. And it ends up this guy gets favored because of that. This is the kind of stuff that was going on with the priests. I got some money. I want to pay you to put me in this position. Can you give me a title? Now watch. We are going to see before we're done that some of the priests were not beyond robbing the temple to buy titles and positions for themselves. So I'm the banker. Where's the money? It's in the bank. Who's got the keys to the bank? I do. I'm the priest. And so some of the priests robbed the temple to do their own bidding. Remember, power vacuum. No kings, no prophets. Priests were pretty much running the show at different times. That sounds like it's an overstatement, but as we go further, you're going to see how much that it was a true indication of what's going on. Third, he goes to Jerusalem, he can rob the temple, he can sell offices, and he can, while he's there, get these people to stop worshiping their Jehovah God and start worshiping the Greek gods. And he goes after all of them. He goes after all of them. Because of the spread of Alexander's empire, a spread that continued even after his death by those generals. So when Alexander started, his successors kept on, and their successors kept on. So we are multiple successors past Alexander and his immediate successors. They're doing the same thing. And now it's reaching Judah and Jerusalem. And now it's changing God's people, all right? So even before this guy comes to Jerusalem to rob the temple, there's a growing influence and a debate. Watch this. This is critical. A debate about how far we're going to go to pick up Greek culture. So when something's new, I'm going to pick on Lyle and Pat because we're children of the same era. All right. In the 60s and 70s, did clothing change? Did hairstyle change? Did everything? I remember when bell bottoms came out. Man, those were cool. I remember when everybody had hip hugger pants and wide belts and wore mutton chop sideburns and stuff and long hair. I'm going to ask a very personal question. Lyle, did you have hair back then?
Yes. It was Auburn.
I remember when the black people that I knew had afros like this. My roommate in high school, Milton Franklin, we called him Spanky, had one huge, incredible afro. I mean, I remember when Dr. J played with a fro. I mean, that goes away. They don't do that anymore. That was a cultural thing. People adopted what was popular culture. Dress, language, habits, all this kind of stuff. So Greek culture is everywhere, and Jews are not immune to being indoctrinated and succumbing to the influence of the cultures around them. So this is going on. Greek ideas, clothing, arts, theater, culture, taking root. Spread of Greek culture, the desire of prominence and wealth, because these are the people who were leading the empires around them, prompted the priests to curry favor. Look at that. The priests to curry favor. Why do they want to curry favor? We want you to protect us. What can we do so you let us do what we want to do? How much money you got? What can you do? One high priest, Onias III, met with a brother of Antiochus IV after the death of their father. While he was away, his brother Joshua, his Greek name was Jason, offered Antiochus money so that he could be the priest. Now let me get you to know something. He was a brother to a priest, and so he was in the priestly line. But he wanted to buy the right to be a priest and depose his brother. That's the first reference to somebody using wealth to buy position in the service of God. It was never anticipated, never planned for. This is the kind of stuff that's going on. Just to remind you, when you get down to the time of Jesus, there are two men mentioned as high priest, Annas and Caiaphas. They're related. How come two guys are high priests at the same time? This is not the first time we see that in the time of Jesus. We're going to see it here. So here are two brothers, one's a priest and the other one wants to be priest. So Antiochus needed money and here was easy money. Jason Kidd came and said, I'll give you the money, all right? He didn't have to conquer the nation, didn't have to rob the temple. This guy says, I'll pay you. Let me be the priest. Don't let my brother be the priest. It's no business of anybody outside of the way the Jewish temple was run, according to the dictates of the law of Moses, who's going to be priest. That's not the job of people who are controlling the country. So he took a power. Took a bribe. All right? So let's go a little further. So here's the way it was done then. Aaron's the first priest. He has four sons, Nadab and Abihu. First two die, Ithamar and Eleazar. The priesthood continues through those seed lines. The first two, they died. Following Aaron's death, that seed line continues through one of those two sons. All right, that's the way it was. That's changing. All right, remember, I mentioned this before, the priesthood is going to be an issue. Just remember what Paul said when he met the elders of Ephesus at Miletus. He said, there's going to be trouble coming from among you yourselves, elders. They're going to cause the church to be different. And so leadership changes in the elders in the first two centuries or so after the church started creates a dynamic hierarchical system that never existed. You never had regional bishops or regional archbishops over multiple churches. You always had local elders over local churches. All right? That was the way we use the word autonomous today. That word's not found in Scripture, but the principle is there. All right? The point is there was a change in the structure of things. That's starting now with reference to the priesthood system, all right? So Joshua, named Jason, that was his Greek name, was the first time the priesthood became a matter of appointment, political machinations. That means, I'm going to pay you, get me something good, all right? It would not be the last time. And the situation is going to get even worse. This is a guy who's in the line to be the priest, buys the right to be priest from somebody else who has no business granting that authority, but he was in power. Antiochus could make it happen. He could get rid of one brother and install another. Later, we're going to see guys who aren't priests say, I want that. And then we're going to see two brothers fighting against each other. And they
so
go
they
to war.
They still remain, though, Levitical, right?
No. Thank you for bringing that up. No.
Okay. Got that.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
That's what's so amazing. this, I mean, here's the thing. They are both in line as brothers to be priests, but there's an order, all right? Yeah. So this guy violates the principle of the order and buys the right to be priest, supposedly, I use the word right with air quotes,
right, yeah,
from this foreign ruler who's all about imposing Greek culture, all right? Not done, but thank you for bringing that up. And I'm sorry if I said something too.
Okay.
I just, because when I, every time I go through this, I'm thinking, how far away have they gone from what God wanted? I don't want to be off topic, but remember, this is setting the stage for what Jesus deals with when he comes on the scene. This is what's been going on the last few hundred years. Yes, sir.
What word would you use for autonomous? If you cannot be in autonomy, what word would you use?
Well, it's self-control.
Oh,
that they were in control of their,
right,
they were in control of their own destiny. All right,
okay.
The Jewish people were not autonomous. They weren't in control of their own destiny. They were always under the political and the military thumbprint of other nations, going back to the time of Babylon. Babylon, Medes and Persians, Greek, and about to come up Rome. But at this time, they have some freedom because people are staying out of their way, except this guy Antiochus is causing problems. And he's causing problems because he has problems, all right? When somebody has problems with money, they're going to go find out somebody who doesn't have problems with money and say, can I borrow money? Can I take money? What can I do to get money from you? So here's Antiochus, goes to different places, and ancestor rulers before him did the same thing. There's where the money is. I'm going to go there.
I think that's a lot of
You mean of the love of money?
Yeah.
That's Paul writing to Timothy.
Yeah, Timothy.
But it was a Pauline letter.
Yeah.
And so, now watch. The seed...
But it's the same concept.
That, yeah. The point is, something's going to cause them to go away here. Now watch. Again, this is a huge explanation of my own here to make sense of this. The priestly seed line was protected. Mm-hmm. It was protected. Only these, now you might think, well, why in the world would God care? It's an issue of respecting God's word, God's authority, God's honor, God's integrity, trusting in God providentially to take care of what he says he will take care of when we place our trust and faith in him.
He was very specific with the tabernacle. Who could take care of the folding of certain things.
All the different ones, and we'll mention this in part when we're going through here a little bit further. So watch, he's protecting it. The messianic seed line from Eve through Abraham through David is all protected. You might think, well, the Aaronic seed line, what difference does that make? That's not leading to Jesus the Messiah. That's just keeping the priesthood intact. It's the same principle. Watch this. Jesus' parents, each of whom were descendants of David. John's parents, each of whom were descendants of Aaron. John's daddy, Zacharias, was a descendant of Aaron, and it says specifically Elizabeth of the daughters of Aaron. Well, that's coincidental, isn't it not? No. You've got both Mary and Joseph descended, one through Solomon, one through Nathan. You see one in Matthew, one in Luke, Matthew 1, Luke chapter 3. And John's parents are both descended through Aaron. There's something about keeping these seed lines the way God wanted them to be. So the seed line of the Messiah through Eve, through David, through Abraham, that was protected. During the time of Ezra and Nehemiah, we just saw this. After the restoration, we didn't emphasize enough, if you wanted to be a priest, you had to prove you could be a priest. I'm a priest. How do you know? Well, my granddaddy was a priest. Got papers. Can you prove that? All right? I have two dogs. All right? They're mutts. They're mixed breeds. Got no papers. They chew paper, but they don't have papers. The point is, if you've got some animal that's worth a lot of money, you can prove it. All right? My daddy loved to raise horses. He'd get them to a certain point, let trainers raise them, and he was really big into quarter horses. And so he had papers on every horse he ever owned. You know, this one is a descendant of this person, a descendant of this person, whatever, and they knew this is so-and-so who came from this person, whatever.
So John the Baptist's seed line was through Aaron, right?
His parents were both descendants of Aaron,
okay,
and Jesus' parents were both descendants of David.
All right, so
the protection of the seed line is not just incidental, it's intentional.
Mary and Elizabeth were connected, were they not?
Yeah, and the issue is we often refer to them as cousins. They were related, but you can't prove that they were exact cousins.
Okay.
And so that's an issue. But she's referred to as a relative. But the exact connection we're not sure of. All right. But in this context, the whole priest system had a genealogical methodology to it all of its own. So in the redo of everything, Ezra and Nehemiah were in part trying to make sure that the seed line was established, all right? So what happened here was Joshua, the Greek name Jason, and Antiochus IV violated that seed line continuity. You changed something here. More details about that in the last half of Exodus, where all the spelling out of the sanctification process and the consecration process of Aaron and his sons, that's all spelled out there. And then, from the time of David and the first temple forward, that seed line is protected. This is off topic, but not off topic. When Zechariah, the father of John the Baptist, was in the temple, and people realized something's going on because he's in there a long time, do you know how many priests there may have been during the time of Christ, at the time that Zechariah, John's father, was in the temple? 20,000. The point is, you had a routine schedule that you had to follow as to who could, when, where, and why would be involved in going into the temple. And because there were so many priests, you could be a priest for all your life and not get into the temple because there's so many priests. So that schedule of the order was developed by David, according to orders. He was a priest of the order of Abijah, opening verses of Luke chapter 1. So he had to wait his time. When he was finished that particular time, he went back home. And he may have never been called again. I don't want to compare it to jury duty, but the point is there was a scheduling of these things. And it was more than just providential that he was in that place at that time doing what he was supposed to do when the angel appeared to him saying, you're going to have a son. And initially he didn't believe it. That's why he was dumb for a while. But that's an interesting sideline. All right. We noted earlier, there are already factions in place. All right. There were factions in place from the Jews who came back from captivity, the people who were already there. There were some in Asia Minor. There were some in Egypt, all doing different stuff. And the Samaritans on top of that. There are also divisions with inhabitants of Judah during the time that this is going on. Some people were all about adopting Greek culture. Hey, what's so bad about it? You know, they got language, they've got theater, they got arts. We don't have a problem with that. Some people are pro-Seleucid, which was one of the generals of Alexander. Some of them were pro-Egyptian. That's the Ptolemies. Some of them were pro one priest or another priest. So you've got all kinds of people divided. We lived in Puerto Rico many, many years ago. And Puerto Rico's been vying for statehood for a long time. If you go to Puerto Rico and you start bringing up the issue of statehood, you're going to find somebody might disagree with you. Some people want to become a separate country. They want to pull away from us. Some people like it just where they are as a protectorate. And some people are all about statehood. The point is, there are three huge political factions in Puerto Rico about what's going to happen to the future of Puerto Rico. Here, you got the same thing going on. There, it's an ethnic thing. Here, it's a religious thing. And religious divisions and tensions can be really deep-seated. All right? And so that's going on. This is going on even before Antiochus came there. All right? So he came to rob. Watch this. He came to rob, raid, ruin the temple, and institute Greek worship. Made many Jews embrace Greek dress and Greek sports. Watch this. This quote's going to get you. Some of them even went so far as to undergo the painful operation that reversed circumcision. You might say, what's that about? Occasionally, you'll see big billboards that talks about reversing vasectomies. All right? I know a couple of people who've gone through that, and they say, that's a different procedure. All right? We're going to fix something that we broke on intentionally. What are they doing this for? Because they wanted to play sports with all the Greek boys. Well, how do you know whether or not somebody is this way or not? Because they didn't wear their clothes when they were involved in the Olympic Games of those days. All right? You might think, that's weird, and this is the Jews who thought, no, nakedness is not a good thing. God's condemned that. The only time it's mentioned good is in Genesis chapter 2, before sin occurred. All right? So you might think, this is crazy. This is how far they're going to adopt Greek culture? Uh-huh. This is how far they were going. Complications continue. Now watch. All right? This is my outbreak just a few seconds ago, outburst when Pat said what she did. But they were all Levites. No. Complications continued. 3 years later, after Joshua paid to become a priest, Menelaus offered more money. All right? But Menelaus wasn't in the priestly line. You got more money? You can be a priest. I don't care who you are. This is nuts. All right? So, we noted earlier Joshua and his bribe, Jason's bribe, was the first violation. But in spite of his bribe, we know that at least he was in the priestly lineage. Menelaus was not. Thus, a second and even greater breach occurred. The bribe, that's one thing, buying it, and second, the seed line's broken. The seed line's broken. From one perspective, not much changed from the standpoint of how things going on. Menelaus, he was a proponent of Greek culture. So here's another reason. You got a guy who's not really in the priestly family. He wants to buy into being a priest, and I'm okay with him as being a priest because, one, he's giving me more money, and two, he sides with us with reference to Greek culture. All right? The other guy was okay, but this guy's not the Hebrew. All right? He's not the Levite that the other guy was. All right, we're not done. In order to pay the money that he pledged to Antiochus, all right, Mr. Menelaus stole from the temple treasury. I not only want you to make me a priest, I am not a priest. I'm not of this particular tribe, but I'm going to. When you make me priest, I'll pay for it. I'll take the money. Remember, Mr. Antiochus wanted to get money from the Jews from the temple treasury. Now he's got a guy who's bought his way into the priesthood who will help him rob the temple. All right. So, what's the best way to rob the bank? Inside job. And I'm not. This is not funny. This is horribly sad. But you think if you read this, you think, no, this is some kind of murder mystery. This is some kind of make-believe whodunit kind of thing. This is what's going on in the land of Palestine within 100 or so years of Jesus coming on the scene. So this is the history that preceded Jesus and John's appearance on the scene. And this is what defined in part what Israel was like during that first century. It was a first century that was relatively stable after all kinds of mess had happened before that. We're still going through the mess, all right? So allegedly Menelaus had the last legitimate priest. Remember, he went to go talk to the brother of Antiochus, and while he was gone, Jason said, hey, make me king, make me priest. And so that guy was the last legitimate priest, and it's assumed that Menelaus had that guy killed. So now people are killing each other to get away with what they want to do in order to be priests and to rob the temple, by the way. All right? So this is very sad stuff. Later, Antiochus comes back from an Egyptian expedition, and this guy who he helped make a priest, he helped them steal additional things from the temple. They started robbing precious things from the temple. Now, those people who cared about this were outraged. But some people were okay because, you know, we're okay with Greek culture. We don't care what you do. Rob the temple all you want. Just, you know, stay out of our lives. The next year, Mr. Antiochus, this is the bad guy that we're talking about here, he's going to go against Egypt again. And this one didn't fare well. Now watch what happens here. Mr. Antiochus is going to go to Egypt. Remember, he's up here, and I'm drawing the picture if you look at it. He's up here in Syria. And you've got Palestine here, and Egypt is over here in North Africa. So he's going to go against Egypt again, and he has to go through Palestine on the way. He gets to Egypt, and he had one incursion against them that went okay. Remember, the Ptolemies and the Seleucids were two different generals and their successors who were taking over after Alexander died. But they fought against each other. They were sometimes in each other's hair. So he goes there. And he gets there, and there's a Roman officer. The guy's name is Papilius Lanus. He was sent there by the authority of the Senate in Rome. Now remember, Rome's influence is growing, and he said, stay away from Egypt. And he left. What's that about? He knew what Rome's power was, and he saw where Rome's power was going. Okay? Earlier in his life, Antiochus' dad was defeated by Rome, and he was personally imprisoned there. He saw what Rome was like. And so he left there. And so when he was told to leave, that's exactly what he did. So in the meantime, remember, Mr. Jason was the guy who first bought stuff. He came and, remember, Menelaus paid more money. Oh, I didn't mean to do that. Menelaus paid more money, and he became the priest. And Jason, while Antiochus was away, Jason came and took it back. So the first guy bought it. The second guy offered more money. The first guy come, says, I'm going to get rid of you. All right. So Antiochus, he's tired of this stuff. He got these guys fighting about the priest. He just didn't get to do what he wanted to do in Egypt. So he's going to make a point. All right. Things are going to go from bad to worse. All right. A year later, he sends a commander to the city. All right. They destroyed the walls of the city of Jerusalem. This is the walls that were rebuilt during the time of Zerubbabel, Ezra, and especially Nehemiah. At the same time, he places a foreign group of people in a citadel, that is a fortified area, in the city of Jerusalem, not Jews, right by the temple. So the Jews are a little concerned. What are these Gentile people doing living in our city so close to the temple? All right? That area is called the Acra. The people who moved there were in sync with the Jews who supported Menelaus in his push for Hellenization. Why? Because they're from that background, Grecian background. The Gentiles, however, went beyond that. More than embracing Greek culture, they worshiped Greek gods in the city of Jerusalem near the temple. Remember, this guy was all about insisting people follow Greek gods. That changes what's going on in Jerusalem. Those people are sympathetic, leaning toward keeping the law and the priestly system, left Jerusalem. So it got so bad that people who wanted to do what was supposed to be done in the temple left. Why? Because nobody's letting them do what they want to do anyway. This guy's already defiled the temple and so forth. And one of these guys' names is Mattathias. All right, I can't read side. There is his name over there. Mattathias is the grandson of the man Hasmonean, that the name Hasmonean comes from, and he's the father of Judas Maccabee. So the Hasmoneans and the Maccabees, same people, two different generations on either side of Mattathias. So they leave. They leave. So I said things are going to get worse. All right. So Mr. Antiochus declares that the worship of and obedience to Jehovah was against the law, his law. Notice the Babylonians allowed people to do whatever they wanted, even when they were in captivity. The Persians allowed people to do what they wanted, even back in their homeland. But not this guy. This guy is going to tell people what you could and could not do, and he was going to enforce it. He forbade the Jews to worship God. Forbade the Jews to worship God in the temple. So Greek culture was prominent. It was not dominant in the sense of smothering other religions. Indeed, Greek culture was usually tolerant, but this guy wasn't tolerant. All right? Sometimes the people who are the least tolerant are the ones who tell everybody else to be tolerant. So here's a guy who is supposed to be promoting Greek culture, which was a religion or a culture of toleration, who was anything but that. Notice, here's what he said you can't do. You can't keep the Sabbath. You can't read, you can't teach the law. He went about destroying copies of the Old Testament law, the Torah. He said you can't keep circumcision anymore. You can't follow the Levitical dietary. All this is part of the law that was part of the redo. That's why we spent so much time on that yesterday and why we kicked it off again tonight, saying, remember, this is the redo. Well, here you go a couple hundred years later and the guy's trying to undo what God told him to redo. All right? Problems. Turn the temple of God into a pagan place of worship. We talked about that already. Now it's actually happening. So, he desecrates the altar, offers unclean animals, places an altar of their gods over the altar of God, institutes religious and sacred prostitution in the temple of God. I remind you, Manasseh, one of the wickedest guys who ever lived, burned kids to the fire of false gods. He changed his life before he died, but removed things from the temple and placed pagan idols in the temple. All right, and he was a Jewish king in the line of the kings of David. He was a king in Judah.
He was Jewish.
He was a king. He was in the line of David. All right, but he was wicked. He changed and repented. Kings doesn't tell you that, but Chronicles does. He didn't live long enough to undo all the evil that he'd done. But here is a pagan king doing this. He turns it into a temple worshiping Zeus, the Greek god, forbids sacrifices according to the law, the redo thing that we've been talking about, and changes it into a place of prostitution as part of their devotion to Greek gods. All right, here's where things, I keep saying it's going to get worse. You didn't go along with this, I'll kill you. During the days of the New Testament era in Asia Minor, where the seven churches of Asia were, and those weren't the only churches that were there. They're representative, reflective of all the churches that were there. Worship of the Roman empires was stronger. Emperors were stronger there than it was in the city of Rome. I mentioned before that in that area there were more than 200 places of worship to the Roman Emperor Augustus alone. And people were serious about that. You don't worship the emperor, you don't pay libation, you don't pay taxes. In this context, we won't let you do business. We will prosecute you, persecute you, and some people died. You read the book of Revelation, and you get in the second, third chapter, the letters to the seven churches, some people died, and more people will die. That's what that's about. So in this context, you don't go along with what these people are doing, you can't live. Some of the religious leaders said, we're not going to lose our lives over this. We'll give in and we'll do what they want us to do, which meant violating God's will. Others went along to escape punishment, but others refused to do so. They were found out, they were killed. The text that we're referring to said thousands were killed. In this context, he talks about a mother who took her two children, infants, and no doubt twins, to be circumcised according to the order of the law. And they hung the babies after they killed them around her neck, executed the mother, killed her husband, because he was the father of the children, and killed the man who performed the circumcision. Why? That's Jehovah God stuff. Two babies died, mama died, daddy died, and the guy who did the circumcision died. Why? Because they were wanting to do what God wanted. This is not to compare everything that would happen during the days of ISIS, which they are always trying to make a resurgence, but that's pretty sick stuff. All right? Man's inhumanity to man just makes you weep. It hurts. So, Jews weren't dying as they went to battle. You go to battle with Saul, you might die against the Philistines. You can go to battle with David during Solomon's army, you might be killed. Jews are dying for no other reason than doing what God wanted them to do. For no other reason than doing what God wanted to do from the standpoint of worship. Now, so, you know, you don't see all this written in the... Here's where we're going to get into the literature that we're going to deal with tomorrow. This is not written in the law. It's anticipated persecution. It's not written in the writings of the wisdom literature or the writings of the prophets. This all happens in this period of time when Malachi is closed and before you get to the beginning of John's ministry. This is what the Jews were facing in their land when Jesus came on the scene.
When you consider some of what you just taught.
And this is just part of it.
Yeah, but when you get to Acts 15, where it talks about the discussion of the council.
Right.
Then you can see why some of the Judean Jews
right.
were so upset with what was being done.
And that's about people who are zealous for doing the law. They
right.
went a little bit crazy. This guy is zealous for not letting people do any
right.
aspect
but
of law. But the same thing.
For what they weren't allowed to do.
Yeah.
Why they got that way.
I mentioned this before, and I'm just going to mention it very quickly again. If you pick up a copy of this book, I think the digital copy, the e-book, is like $8 or $9. I think this one was like $11. This has a lot more detail. What we're going through here is more on an academic thing. This is a more popular level, and I don't mean anything negative about it, but it's very, very accessible. What we are doing is only introducing generally what happened.
Right.
The specific details are there.
But the history impacts how some of the people reacted to
that's correct.
Things.
That's correct. All right, now we're going to segue a little bit into what we're going to get into more detail. How do we know all this stuff? There's no prophets now. Moses didn't record this. Isaiah didn't record this. This is recorded by secular history, and here's where we get into the books known as the Apocrypha. I'm watching the time. We've gone a couple minutes past. I want to stop after I introduce this. Much of what we know are found in the books called the Apocrypha, specifically 1st and 2nd Maccabees. Notice the name. The name Maccabees comes from Judas Maccabeus, or Judas the Hammer, a name that came to apply to that family. And so it was not necessarily written by members of that family, but writes about the history of what this family did in resisting what Mr. Antiochus started. All right? They're not inspired, but they're still historically significant. All right? This book is not an inspired book. All right? None of these books are inspired, except, well, this one's a Bible. but this one contains the Apocrypha in it, and that's why I brought it. We'll get into that later. But my point is, that doesn't mean they don't relate events that are real, and some of these things have been corroborated by other texts outside of that. So, this first one, 1 Maccabees, chronicles what we call the Maccabean War, and this is what we're calling this period, just very quickly in our outline. I'm going back a long ways to make a point, but this is called the Maccabean War Breaks Out. Why did war break out from among the Maccabees? Because they were sick and tired of Seleucids and Antiochus and others doing what we just talked about. All right? So the war is going to break out. So we get down to where we just left off and went a little bit too further. Good, I highlighted it. All right? First book details the Maccabean War. It starts chronologically before the persecution that Mr. Antiochus started. All right? And it ends with the death of his last son, Simon, Mattathias' son, who's going to be a priest and a ruler in Palestine. So we're going to see the beginning of a dynasty. The next period of time is called Hasmonean Dynasty. These guys who fight off the Seleucids are going to establish a kingdom of their own. All right? still in the land of Palestine. But that's going to be interesting. We're going to talk about that a little bit later. All right, the second book of Maccabees, written by an unknown author, written about the same period of time. It also claims to be an abridgment of a man by the name of Jason of Cyrene. This is cited in the book of 2 Maccabees, 5 volumes. And so there's a book written that was a 5-volume history that was recorded during this time. And this one is an abridgment of that. And Reader's Digest years ago used to always publish Reader's Digest books. They'd take a humongous book and they would condense it. And they would take articles from books and condense it. And sometimes you could buy a book of books that was like 5 books in one, and they were all shortened. They were abridged. They were condensed versions. All right? It's Cliff Notes kind of stuff. All right?
Prior to Cliff Notes.
And so this guy took that and he's going to rewrite this stuff. Now, the first one was written in Greek, follows a Greek, not a biblical model. This is the first one, follows a biblical model. You're going to see that it makes it sound like it was written by a biblical author. The second one was not. Then both of the books talk about the same time frame. Now, we're going to take a break, and then the next hour we're going to talk about Matthias and his sons. Why? They are going to start a literal, physical, military revolution, beating the people who are oppressing the Jews, forcing them to capitulate in their religion. This is the mindset that was in part among God's people when Jesus was on the scene. There were people who said, we want to do what Matthias and his sons did, and we want to fight against the Romans and kick them out of here. All right? Where did that come from? It had been done before. It had been done before, 150 years before. Some of the Jews, in guerrilla warfare, fought off these people who were imposing the Greek system of worship on them. And they thought, they did it then, we can do it now. You can see why people were very, very, you know, walking on eggshells when Jesus was around there thinking, is this a guy that's going to lead a revolt like these guys did, Matthias and his son? If it is, our lives are in danger. And if the Romans come like they did before, they'll kill us all. All right? So that political tension, that religious tension affected what people did in every aspect of life. All right, let's take a break. Thanks for your patience, by the way.